From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the latest on the Iraq crisis. Separatists downing a Ukrainian military helicopter. India opening its civilian nuclear facilities to the IAEA, plus the World Cup continuing in Brazil. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman, the first of up to 300 military advisors President Obama committed to help Iraq counter a Sunni militant surge have begun their mission. Pentagon spokesperson Rear Admiral John Kirby.
We have begun to deploy initial assessment teams. Two special operations teams of approximately 40 personnel, previously assigned to the embassy through the Office of Security Cooperation, have started their new mission. In addition, approximately 90 additional troops assigned to help stand up the Baghdad Joint Operations Center have arrived on station in Baghdad. Within the next few days, these troops will be joined by four additional teams of approximately 50 people total who will deploy to Iraq from within the Central Command region. These teams will assess the cohesiveness and readiness of Iraqi security forces, higher headquarters, in Baghdad, and examine the most effective and efficient way to introduce follow-on advisors.
Kirby also spoke about U.S. air surveillance over Iraq.
We continue to fly routine and regular ISR missions over Iraq to the tune of about 30 to 35 flights per day to help us gain better insight about the security situation on the ground. This continued effort will no doubt aid our assessment teams as they begin their important work.
The advance of the Sunni militants, the al-Qaeda breakaway group, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, also called ISIL, has sparked a crisis there in Iraq. And U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry met there on Tuesday with Kurdish leader Masoud Barzani in an effort to convince him to close ranks with the government in Baghdad to fend off an insurgency by the Sunni militants. It was the secretary's final round of diplomacy with Iraqi leaders before leaving the country. We get more now from Edward Uranian in the VOA Middle East Bureau.
Secretary Kerry's visit to Kurdistan came amid a new round of conflicting reports. Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant militants had captured Iraq's largest oil refinery at Beji, north of Tikrit. VOA could not independently confirm who is in control of Beji. Amateur video showed the aftermath of a bombing raid over the militant-controlled Iraqi border town of Qa'im facing Syria. Witnesses claim Syrian warplanes bombed militant positions from the air. In Kurdistan, Secretary Kerry thanked Kurdish leader Masoud Barzani for helping battle the militants during their meeting. He went on to stress that resolving the current conflict revolves around forming an inclusive new government in Baghdad.
As everybody knows, this is a very critical time for Iraq as a whole, and the government formation challenge is the central challenge that we face. In recent days, the security cooperation between the forces here in the Kurdish area have been really critical to helping to draw a line with respect to ISIL and also to provide some support to the Iraqi security forces.
But Mr. Barzani was cautious about cooperating with the Baghdad forces.
لكن لا يمكن أن نقاتل بدون أن يكون هناك.
He says it is impossible to fight the militants without a clear future, a complete agreement, and a complete political solution. Secretary Kerry told U.S. broadcaster CBS that President Barack Obama is not planning to help the government of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki with air support due to the lack of a political consensus among Iraqi leaders. He said it would be a total act of irresponsibility for the president to order airstrikes when the current Iraqi government is not unified. Prime Minister Maliki has vowed to form a new government by a July 1 constitutional deadline, but he appears to be increasingly challenged by Sunni and Shiite political adversaries. Mr. Maliki does appear to still have the backing of his country's chief power broker, Iran. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The United Nations is accusing ISIL of wide-ranging human rights violations in Iraq. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, where investigators say the Sunni militants have killed hundreds of civilians, wounded many more since its invasion of Iraqi cities began early this month.
According to UN investigators, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant has been accumulating a large and grisly record of gross human rights violations since its invasion of northern Iraq early this month. Human rights investigators working with the UN Assistance Mission in Iraq say they have verified numerous alleged violations perpetrated by this group. But they say the numbers they cite of civilians killed and injured are underestimated. The UN report finds at least 757 civilians were killed and 599 injured in Nineveh, Diyala, and Salah al-Din provinces between June 5th and 22. UN human rights spokesman Rupert Colville says these figures include summary executions and extrajudicial killings of civilians, police, and soldiers who were not fighting.
At least another 318 people were killed and a further 590 injured during the same period in Baghdad and areas in the south, many of them as a result of at least six separate vehicle-borne bombs. Abductions continue to be reported in the northern provinces and in Baghdad. These include a number of cases of foreigners, such as the 48 Turkish citizens abducted from Turkey's consulate when ISIL captured Mosul.
The UN Assistance Mission in Iraq documents the cases of dozens of other foreigners, as well as Shia civilians and members of minority groups that have been abducted in Mosul, Baghdad, and other places. It says some of those kidnapped have been released, while others have been subsequently found dead, in some cases by summary execution. The report highlights dozens of videos broadcast by ISIL showing cruel treatment and beheadings and shootings of soldiers and police officers out of combat. It says some of these people apparently are targeted because of their religion or ethnicity. But Colville also says the Iraqi army has allegedly carried out at least two summary executions of prisoners and the killing of 31 detainees at a police station. He says these cases still are not verified.
UNAMI human rights officers have, however, confirmed another reported summary execution of prisoners by ISF personnel as they withdrew from the Nineveh Operations Command Center in Mosul. In this case, grenades were reportedly thrown into rooms filled with detainees, killing at least 10 and injuring another 14.
The United Nations is urging the Iraqi authorities to swiftly and thoroughly investigate these alleged crimes. Colville says the United Nations will continue to collect evidence of wrongdoing by ISIL. He says the information could be used to bring the perpetrators to justice. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you can keep up to date on what's happening in Iraq plus the international response by going to our website. We're at voanews.com.
I'm Ira Melman with an invitation for you to come and visit the American Cafe. It's a place where you can come and get a taste of America, from the bitter to the sweet. This past week, the United States recognized some mistakes it had made in the past.
Some of these soldiers fought and died for a country that did not always see them as equal.
For some in the Asian American communities, some stereotypes, although positive, are not always helpful.
What ends up happening is that we don't see what problems actually exist under the surface.
And then there are those who put it all on the line at a very popular festival in the capital city of Texas.
I don't know what to do with my life, but I really, 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 really want to be famous.
Come and visit the American Cafe. We have a new program for you every week. You can hear it on the radio, on the web, or iTunes, or at voanews.com. Come join us. No reservation necessary.
Saturday's shooting deaths of five South Korean soldiers and the wounding of seven others at a Northeast Guard post by another South Korean soldier has renewed questions about the need for reform within the South Korean military, which is able to maintain its force strength largely through conscription of young men aged 18 to 35. According to the website Global Firepower, South Korea's active duty frontline force was 640,000 as of March 2014, with nearly 3 million in reserves as the country maintains an uneasy armistice with North Korea. 22-year-old sergeant was captured Monday after sustaining an apparent life-threatening self-inflicted gunshot wound, according to the defense ministry. The soldier was classified as someone who shows suicidal tendencies, but later tests showed improvement that he needs only focused attention to complete his general duties. James Kim, a security analyst at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies, told VOA's Victor Beatty some of the soldiers suffer from a mental condition that other militaries often face, that is PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, from exposure to combat conditions.
This is a problem that I think you find not only in Korea, but in any other situations where you have people in high stress and under duress. And given that Korea technically is still at war, though albeit in a ceasefire situation, these men are put in a situation of a lot of stress, and they're sometimes in the front line, and they're asked to deal with certain situations that we may not all hear about. It's only natural that these kinds of problems become apparent. It's just that it surfaces and manifests itself in these kinds of ways, which is unfortunate. Individuals in these kinds of situations could be pushed to the limit in terms of what they can take.
Do I imply by your remark that this kind of thing happens all the time only because of the extent of the number of fatalities this one made the news?
There are similar kinds of situations to arise, but I think it's only natural that these kinds of events, if they do happen for individuals that are put in these kinds of situations. As we see in front lines and battlefield anywhere, PTSD is something that we know happens to even soldiers in the United States that return from Iraq or Afghanistan. So the individuals that are in that particular position to be experiencing some stress where they don't know how to handle it or deal with it in a healthy manner, you do see these kinds of manifestations.
Do you think there'll be calls for reform within the Army, perhaps even suggestions of an all-volunteer force in South Korea?
There are a couple of things here. First of all, if you have an all-volunteer force, and the question obviously is whether or not you have the capability to match the threat and thereby deterring any kind of conventional strike from the north. And there are a lot of uncertainties associated with that. So I'm not so sure that the government would go as far as making this a complete reform of the military anytime soon. But I think the current event is an opportunity for the administration to look at potentially making some changes in the military. For instance, part of the reason why these kinds of incidents happen could be due to lack of resources, whether that be lack of manpower, lack of resources in terms of facilities that can handle these kinds of individuals. Perhaps the government can now have some frank discussions, and this is both at the Blue House, also at the National Assembly, about addressing these issues by allocating some more resources to the military.
Kim says a boost in defense spending may be necessary to provide the kinds of services to better detect mental health problems. Longer term, he says, the military will face a growing shortage of eligible conscripts amid South Korea's falling birth rate. Myanmar, also known as Burma, says it will not turn away from reforms in the wake of a controversial raid on a Buddhist monastery and the arrest of five monks. Presidential spokesman told VOA's Burmese service Tuesday that both the government and the military are committed to moving forward. Earlier this month, police raided the monastery in Yangon. Five monks who were disrobed and arrested are now free on bail. Myanmar's Minister of Religious Affairs was later removed from his position after the raid because of corruption allegations. Critics say the government used its power to settle a long-running dispute over control of the monastery while its popular abbot was overseas. As India seeks to increase nuclear power generation, it has decided to open its civilian nuclear facilities to greater oversight by the International Atomic Energy Agency. And as Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi, this is a key step toward boosting nuclear commerce with countries such as the United States and Japan.
Indian Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Akbaruddin says the agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency underlines the country's commitment to the responsible use of nuclear power.
The government has decided to ratify the additional protocol to the India-specific safeguards agreement. This is a signal of our commitment to abide by our international obligations.
Ratification of the protocol will give the nuclear watchdog easier access to scrutinize India's civilian nuclear facilities. Rajiv Nayan at the Indian Institute of Defense Studies and Analysis in New Delhi says the protocol being ratified is in addition to an earlier agreement with the IAEA.
This is basically a confidence building measure that, okay, there is an agreement which is generally considered in the world not adequate, so we'll give you some additional assurance.
The United States has called this an important step in bringing India into the international non-proliferation mainstream. In New Delhi, analysts see it as a signal that India's new government wants to facilitate nuclear trade with countries such as the United States and Japan. In his first policy speech to Parliament this month, Prime Minister Narendra Modi promised to develop nuclear power projects for civilian purposes, an indication that nuclear energy will be a priority as India seeks to address its massive energy shortages. Mr. Modi is expected to travel to Japan in August and the United States in September. Cooperation in the civil nuclear field is likely to be high on the agenda for a country seeking billions of dollars in investment in nuclear power plants. Washington said Monday that it is committed to expanding civil nuclear cooperation with India. Tokyo has also said that it wants to step up nuclear commerce with New Delhi. It was a 2008 deal with the United States that gave India access to international nuclear commerce. It was earlier barred from nuclear trade because it is not a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. But investment in the area has come in slowly, partly because of a tough nuclear liability law that has deterred some foreign investors. While India has struck deals with Russia and France, the first commercial agreement with a U.S. company for nuclear reactors was only signed last year. Analysts say changing the slow pace of civil nuclear cooperation with the United States is an important signal that the new government wants to boost ties with Washington. Analyst Nayan says several large new nuclear plants are expected to come on stream over the coming decade as India remains committed to scaling up nuclear power to meet its massive energy needs.
Even after the tragic incident of Fukushima, we went ahead. We still reposed our faith in nuclear energy. We are going to take several measures to assure people that there will be no problem with nuclear energy or nuclear plants.
India aims to meet a quarter of its electricity requirements from nuclear power by 2050. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
From the ordinary to the extraordinary, you never know what in the world will happen next.
The world is watching with grave concern as Russia has positioned its military.
You should not allow anyone to deprive you of your right to determine the future.
We are using this against terrorist groups coming from Turkey.
For the landing on
civilians. And sponsored by, no, we are not killing civilians.
All that's happening, VOA News works to keep you up to date every hour of every day. So when you want to know what's new, you know what to do. Tune in your radio or click on the internet. World News on the hour, every hour, or at your convenience at voanews.com.
During an official visit to Austria on Tuesday, Russian President Vladimir Putin commented on his decision to withdraw a decree to authorize the use of military force in Ukraine, saying the ceasefire was not long enough.
Постановление о праве применения сил совсем не значит, что мы
Mr. Putin said
the decision doesn't mean Russia is not willing to observe very carefully what is happening in Ukraine. He also pledged to protect the ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine. The decision to cancel the decree regarding the use of military force in Ukraine was announced earlier on Tuesday. Associated Press reports, according to some political analysts, the move reflected President Putin's desire to avoid a new round of Western sanctions. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko applauded the Russian leader's move as a practical step toward bringing peace to a region very tense over the separatist insurgency. And despite earlier offers by insurgents to observe a ceasefire proposed by Mr. Poroshenko, fighting continued in Donetsk on Tuesday. Among other reports of violence, according to the Ukrainian military, a Ukrainian army helicopter was shot down by rebels near the city of Sloviansk, killing all 9 service members on board. At an army checkpoint outside Sloviansk, one Ukrainian soldier said their position had come under repeated sniper and mortar attacks. Meantime, at a separatist checkpoint outside the city of Kramatorsk, rebel gunmen blamed the Ukrainian side for the ceasefire violations. Cameroon's military has arrested 40 suspected Boko Haram militants in a raid in the northern part of the country. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports.
Colonel Nyemek Pierre, who led the military raid, tells VOA that the central government ordered the military action as part of its fight against Boko Haram incursions into Cameroon.
Maintenant, c'est justement le rôle de la gendarmerie.
It is the duty of the military, he says, to filter the population so that enemies do not infiltrate into Cameroon. He adds that the matter is complicated because along the border, there are Nigerians and Cameroonians who belong to the same families, and soldiers have to try to distinguish who is a militant. This is the first time Cameroon's military has carried out an operation on such a large scale in a single day. Northern Cameroon has been plagued for almost a year with an influx of refugees and militants from strife in neighboring Central African Republic and the Boko Haram violence in northern Nigeria. Authorities in Cameroon have been urging citizens along the border, particularly with Nigeria's Borno State, the heart of the Boko Haram insurgency, to cooperate with the government by providing information on suspected sympathizers with the Islamist sect. The government here believes Boko Haram is now expanding its recruiting into Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
And World Cup football action in Brazil on Tuesday. Uruguay defeated Italy 1-0. In Tuesday's other Group D match, Costa Rica and England played to a scoreless draw. Costa Rica had already clinched its first place in the group after earlier upset wins over Uruguay and Italy. In Group C, Greece defeated Ivory Coast 2-1, and Colombia won a 4-1 match over Japan. Brazil, Mexico, and Chile have all earned berths in the second round after the Netherlands had previously clinched a spot from Group B. And in the next round, Brazil will face Chile and the Netherlands will play Mexico. And all 64 matches will be played by the time the final match of the World Cup takes place on July 13. The round of 16 will begin this Saturday, June 28th, with the quarterfinals underway on July 4th and the semifinals on July 8th. And you can follow all the action at the World Cup on Twitter. You can find us at VOA Football or on the internet at voafootball.com. And at Wimbledon on Tuesday, Spain's Rafael Nadal slipped and tumbled to the center court turf Tuesday, but afterwards, he beat 51st-ranked Martin Klizan of Slovakia 4-6, 6-3, 6-3, 6-3 to reach the second round. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us on the Voice of America for International Edition. It's always good to have you with us. And a reminder, you can find us anytime on the Internet at voanews.com. We hope you'll stay tuned. The latest world news is coming up shortly. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Jimmy Cook, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Wednesday.
This is Today in History. On June 25, 1942, Major General Dwight D. Eisenhower took command of U.S. forces in Europe. Eisenhower had never seen combat during his 27 years as an Army officer, but he proved himself a capable leader on the battlefields of North Africa and Italy and was appointed as Supreme Commander of Allied forces during the invasion of Europe. Eisenhower later served two terms as U.S. president. In the pre-dawn hours of June 25, 1950, armed forces from communist North Korea crossed the 38th parallel into South Korea, setting off the Korean War. With U.N. approval, the United States and other foreign powers intervened and pushed north almost to the Chinese border. But that prompted China's intervention, which forced U.N. forces south. After the fighting reached a stalemate, an armistice was signed in 1953. On this day in 1991, Slovenia and Croatia declared their independence, initiating the breakup of the Yugoslav Republic. That move was opposed by Yugoslavia, which initiated a war characterized by the use of heavy weapons to attack urban areas and the use of terrorism to drive away local populations, a procedure that became known as ethnic cleansing. And on this day in 1967, the Beatles appeared on the first live global television link before an estimated 400 million viewers in 26 countries. Asked to perform a song that contained a simple message that could be understood by all nationalities, the Beatles came up with a tune that would become their 14th number one hit in the United States. And that's it for today. I'm Dave DeForest with Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Vital Voices, a U.S.-based international non-governmental organization that trains and mentors women leaders around the world in the areas of political participation, economic development, and human rights, recently awarded its Global Trailblazer Award to Syrian human rights defender Razan Zeytuneh. Her sister Rana accepted the award on her behalf at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. Ms. Zeytuneh is a 37-year-old lawyer who represented Syrian political prisoners across sectarian lines for years. In 2007, she created Syria's first human rights information bank to document violations and publish them to the world. A supporter of peaceful democratic reform and nonviolent civil resistance, she elected to stay in Syria and continue her work in 2011, even after fighting erupted and the regime officially denounced her. Razan Zeytuneh detailed the abuses and the atrocities occurring in Syria and also founded the Violations Documentation Center. In December 2013, Ms. Zeytuneh was abducted, along with her husband and two colleagues, reportedly from the office of the Violations Documentation Center in Douma, near Damascus. Her whereabouts remain unknown, and no individual or group has claimed responsibility for her disappearance. During a speech in London at the Global Summit to End Sexual Violence in Conflict, Secretary of State John Kerry spoke of Razan Zeytuneh.
Razan has risked her life inside Syria to care for political prisoners and call attention to human rights violations, including against women. We stand in awe of her leadership and heroism.
Secretary of State Kerry once again called for the release of Razan Zeytuneh, as well as the release of thousands of detained and disappeared human rights defenders in Syria and around the globe. We need to stand up and stand by them, said Mr. Kerry. Their voices must not be silenced.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.